Hey, Dylan Kelly here, host of the Wave Break podcast. Excited to get into this episode, but first, here's a quick word from our sponsor. If you're looking to grow your business, there's only one way, and that is by building real quality customer relationships. Most marketing software will claim they do this, but they never deliver on their promises, and you need to demand more from your marketing software. And that's where Klaviyo comes in. Klaviyo helps you build meaningful customer relationships by listening and understanding cues from your customers, allowing you to easily turn that information into valuable marketing messages. And that's why 10,000 innovative brands, including all of our clients at WaveBreak, have switched to Klaviyo. Now, what's the secret to building those customer relationships? Tune in to Klaviyo's Beyond Black Friday docuseries to find out and unlock exact marketing strategies you can use to keep momentum going all year round. Just head over to klaviyo.com/beyondbf for more. Link is going to be down in the show notes below. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Wavebreak podcast. I'm your host, Dylan Kelly, founder of Wavebreak. And if you're new here at Wavebreak, we help e-commerce stores stop leaving money on the table with done-for-you email marketing. I just got done speaking with an e-commerce store owner. He's a really solid marketer, but even he said something that really struck a chord with me. He said something like this. He said, listen, I feel like my email marketing could be doing better. I know I'm leaving money on the table there. And honestly, I hear this a lot. I get people emailing me and just asking and reaching out, like not even just to work together, but also it's like, what am I doing wrong? Like, what is the best way to do email marketing for e-commerce stores? And I created something to help you do exactly that. And it's 100% free. That's exactly why I created the e-commerce email success checklist. What it does is this entire list of everything you need to do to stop leaving money on the table and increase your email revenue. So if you think of the 80-20 rule, this checklist is going to show you the simple things that you can do in your business inside your email marketing to unlock 6 to 7 figures of additional revenue per year or more depending on the size of your business. You can get this checklist 100% for free at emailsuccesschecklist.com. That's emailsuccesschecklist.com. If you haven't already picked that up, go check it out, because to be honest, I'm not sure how much longer I'm going to leave it up. I'm not just saying that out of scarcity, but I mean, I literally give away all my secrets in it. So part of me is like, kind of want to take it down and just do the work for people, but it's up for now. So I would go grab it while you still can. And that being said, if you're enjoying the podcast, thank you so much for tuning in. I really appreciate it. Subscribe to make sure you never miss an episode. Just go ahead, click that subscribe button right inside iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you're listening. Tap that subscribe button to never miss an episode, because like I said, we have a ton of great episodes coming out and you're not going to want to miss any of them. This is one of them. Every week on the show, I interview the people behind the top Shopify stores and I get them to share their secrets. Today, as usual, is no different. I've got my friend Joe from a company called Antlion Audio. His name's Joe Lieberman. He's director of marketing from Antlion Audio, and they make these really insane headsets. I'll let him talk to you more about that. But basically, in this episode, I wasn't sure. We both kind of were going to go in a totally different direction with this at first. But what ended up happening in our conversations, we started going down this path, this really interesting path, talking about YouTuber influencer marketing. So Joe and Antlion Audio, they do a lot of partnerships with YouTubers and other influencers. And I know that space is really like, I don't know, it's like really secretive. There's not a lot of content on the topic. Like, you kind of have to piece it together from random case studies and random articles here and there just to learn what people are doing. But anyway, today, I was able to unpack a lot of Joe's expertise. He's very good at landing extremely lucrative partnerships with some of the biggest names on YouTube, people who have, you know, millions of subscribers, over 1 million subscribers, and people like that. He's able to regularly land partnerships with these people. He talks about how to coordinate launches, the exact email script he uses to get people to respond and be interested, because the reality is, influencers are getting hammered by brands to post their content. It's not just easy money. You actually have to win their relationship. And Joe goes into detail on how he does that. He reveals his entire influencer marketing strategy. I ask him some really specific questions. He gives really detailed answers, and it's just a really great episode. So without further ado, let's hop right into that. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Joe.
Hey, thanks for having me on here.
We were talking before the call, and I said, like, man, your microphone sounds so good. It's one of the best ones I've heard in a while from a guest.
Yeah, that has a lot to do with the fact that we are an audio company that specializes in microphones.
Right.
And what you're hearing now is the wireless version of our mic even. So I'm not even using the wired one, which is actually even better in quality, but way less convenient. So,
which is super cool. And we were diving in. You were telling me about your whole setup. Like, I'm literally going to go copy it. But basically what you've got going on is you have, I guess you could tell people, like, what is the setup you're rocking right now with this headphone? Like, first of all, it sounds awesome. Like, it sounds like almost XLR quality. Like, to somebody listening to this on their iPhone through their AirPods, like, they're not going to be able to tell the difference.
That's what we hope. So what I'm using is, so our product, first of all, what it makes it unique is that it's a microphone you can attach to any pair of headphones. So you have a pair that you like or want to buy, you just add our mic in and bam, you've got this sort of ready to go, super high quality headset. So you're not, you know, when you're doing a business call or when you're doing a gaming with friends, you sound great. So what I'm wearing right now are a pair of Audio Technica R70X headphones, which are sort of reference grade open back headphones, and our ModMic wireless.
Yeah, and this totally isn't an ad. Like, seriously, it's just me geeking out as, like, a podcast host who has, like, this big mic that I have to lug around with everything. And then this guy hops on the podcast to do an interview. Sounds amazing. And then he tells me that he could just literally, if his headset wasn't wired, he could be walking around the room with the same exact audio quality, which is just, it's insane.
They work great. They work great with, like, Bose QC35s or, you know, really any decent wireless pair of headphones. I really recommend, actually, Sennheiser makes one called the RS165, which is like super low latency, designed for like watching TV and stuff, but they're also very high quality and nice for gaming. They don't have active noise canceling, but they do sound phenomenal.
Nice. What do you call them? The RS165?
RS165, yeah.
Okay, cool. Just adding that to my list of tabs that they keep adding up. The longer I talk to you, the more audio equipment I keep pulling up on my pulling up here on my computer to go back to and check. But
You'll find for all the listeners, you'll find that once you start getting into the rabbit hole of good audio, and I'm sure there are plenty of listeners out there who are already deep in this hole, it is quite the journey.
Oh my goodness. It's so funny because, like, nobody really gets it, but the people who get it, like, they get it. It is like one of those weird rabbit holes at the corner of the internet. It's kind of like watch people, like, who are, like, really specific and particular about their watches. Then you have, like, the audio people. And I never thought I'd become one of those people until, I guess, you know, now I do this podcast and it's like over 70 episodes in. It's like a lot of people start listening, and then it's just like, how can I keep making it better? And then it's just, next thing you know, your Amazon wish list is full of, like, really expensive microphones and all this technology that it's like, yeah, I'll just order that and I'll figure it out later. Like, figure out how to actually use it. It gets real complex. But anyway, speaking of complex things, so tell us a little bit about you've given us a little background on your company, the company that you work for. Like, what is your role at Antlion Audio?
So as the marketing director, and we use the term kind of loosely, the marketing do-it-all kind of guy, I'm sort of in charge of making sure that people know about us and a little bit in charge of making sure people are buying stuff. But it's primarily the first one, right? Making sure people know who we are and what we do.
Right. So I'd love to get into your background a little bit. So, like, what is your story and, like, how did you get into this role?
Oh, man. Okay. In 2003... I was in college at University of Florida, go Gators, and I had the idea of helping independent game studios, which were called shareware at the time, that's how far back it is, do better with their PR. And I started, kind of by accident, a company doing PR for indie games. It became the first company, as far as I know and as far as I've ever been able to find, that exclusively did marketing and PR for independent game studios. And I ran that until 2016. And where I am throughout that journey, some of my clients ended up being not independent game studios. So I said exclusively, and then I'm going to backtrack slightly. So in 2006, actually, not long after I started, a casual game company called Arcade Town approached me, and they had a sort of a game publishing platform, basically an e-commerce store for casual games. You're familiar with something like Big Fish Games or something like that?
Right.
They approached me and said, hey, we want you to do all of our marketing. And I said, okay. here's a quote for how much that's going to cost. And they said, we'll pay you twice that. And I said, well, all right, then.
Wow.
Let's go.
And they wanted you to come on full time?
Basically, yeah. So there was like this time period where I worked with whatever indie games I could, but I focused very heavily on these guys, Arcade Town. We built that network from when I joined about 6 million visitors a month, which is pretty big, to 13.5 million. And I was the only marketing guy. And we did that through a variety of means, primarily search engine optimization, but also through sponsoring content as sort of the two primary models of driving traffic. And that's just the traffic increase. I can't even talk about the cash flow increase, which was even in greater magnitude than that.
Wow, that's crazy. And so then how did you get to Antline Audio?
Well, so I went back to games after we sold to the guys that made MySpace, Demand Media.
Oh, nice.
So that's its own funny story. Demand Media sold, they were called Intermix when they sold MySpace to Fox. And they came back and repurchased everything that wasn't MySpace. So they were sold like as a bundle, and they repurchased the rest of the things at sort of super discount, including some key properties like Cracked and stuff like that.
Yeah, and do they own like best review guides or like best
They did. What was it? It's iHow was theirs.
Oh yeah,
there's a ton of properties.
Do they have the Toolbox one or something?
I don't remember.
I forget. Do they have a lot of like content and affiliate sites too?
Yeah, they do.
Okay, I think I know which company you're talking about.
Yeah, they're now known as Leaf Group. I don't know what happened and why that is anymore. I totally lost contact with them.
Yeah. That's crazy, though. That's so funny. MySpace, throwback.
Anyway, so fast forward. After that whole deal went down, I went back to doing indie games. I did that for a long time. In 2016, I was just ready for something new, something a little different, something with a little more breadth to it. So instead of, I was doing basically all the marketing for game companies, pretty much top to bottom at that point, not just PR. And in 2016, I was just ready for something different. I ran into these guys because I was looking for this particular product. And I was like, man, this is a great idea. I joined them in 2016. This company started mass production in 2014. We've done, over a quarter million units, I can say that, sold.
So, wow, nice.
Doing all right.
Yeah. So when you get brought on to Antline Audio, like, was there already marketing in place? Were they already driving traffic? Or, like, what did the landscape for this company, like, what did their marketing look like when they brought you on to run it?
This is a really true bootstrap story. It's actually a really good story, too. So, like I said, in 2014 is when they went to mass production. Actual production began in 2012. That was two guys, the founder and the now CEO, in the spare bedroom of an apartment making microphones by hand. like one respirator and one guy standing near an open window.
Oh,
like
my goodness.
Pouring chemicals. And yeah, it's nonsense. You think about that. And then, they had so much demand for this little side project of theirs that they decided to, go to a factory and have them mass produced and started a Shopify site, and demand just kind of continued, really with very little marketing direction or effort behind it. So like when I came on board, the site was still just a generic Shopify template. There was a list of people who had done previous reviews, but no like dedicated PR outreach. It was really just word of mouth, bootstrapped, good product.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, it all starts with that, right? A good quality product. And I think what's crazy too is like so many people think that you need like this crazy, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like everyone thinks they need this like crazy product or like this crazy wide like collection of products to sell. But I mean, you guys are in like a super. I mean, I don't even know what the house, how big it is. But I mean, it's like a really unique niche where it's like you guys are selling a like a microphone that you can clip onto a headset.
Yeah. On the one hand, you know, the microphone market is big. On the other hand, yeah, it is not as big as say even the headphone market. Or we really specialize in gaming. That's where we started, right? That's sort of where that word of mouth spread.
Right.
So, you know, our challenge is moving into other sectors than gaming. But, you know, basically, I would say our niche is gaming microphones, which is, yeah, pretty narrow.
Right. But you guys have built a pretty, I mean, you're all making a living off this business. So it's not like too small, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We make a profit.
Yeah,
and everything.
That's awesome. So how with these small markets, I mean, they're probably not even that small. Like you really, people think they need like 500 million people to be able to like, you know, have like a big enough market. But like, obviously you guys are proving otherwise. Like, so I mean, for one, that probably makes your marketing easier since you're so like niched down. So like, what does your marketing look like? I guess like from a high level, if you just start there, like how, so you're selling this product, like do people already know they need the product or like what does your marketing look like?
So actually our primary challenge is making people understand the problem statement. And I imagine, at least when it comes to any product that is not something people instantly recognize, that's always going to be the number one challenge. So if you say, I have a pair of headphones, everybody knows what a pair of headphones is. They're, you know, you can just dive right into the details of what makes your headphones different. But we are not just a microphone, right? We are a very specific type of microphone that does a very specific role, right? It's a microphone that attaches to any pair of headphones. And immediately when somebody says that, the response I get when we go to like shows and stuff is, why would I need that, right? Because immediately they think, well, I have a headset. Isn't that good enough? And you know, so then you have to do the why question of, well, your headphones on that headset are probably not the best, and the mic on that headset is probably not the best. For the same price you paid for that headset, you can probably get better headphones and a better mic.
Right.
And then they go, oh, I get it now, right? But getting that message across to somebody other than having that conversation in person is a pretty big challenge.
Right. And the thing in gaming too is like they sell these expensive headsets that look really cool, but then it's like they put these microphones on and that sound just like garbage. Like I'm not going to eat my mic and make my own mic sound bad just because obviously, you know, I'm a nice guy. But some of them sound pretty terrible even though the headsets themselves are expensive and the audio might be good, but then it's like it's almost like they just slap some random mic from China on the end and it's like call it a day.
It happens a lot, right? Yeah. So that's where we found our niche, really. That's exactly where we found our opportunity, was that these guys weren't doing a good job with their mics and that people out there wanted to use the headphones they already own, right? I mean, really, the idea came about from our founder, Jimmy, because he had a pair of headphones on hand and he's like, why do I have to go out and buy a whole headset just to play? I forget the game at this point, but I think it was, let's just say it was Call of Duty or whatever. It was some first-person shooter, which I've just blanked on the name of which one it was. Maybe it was Counter-Strike. Doesn't matter. The point is, yeah, he's like, why can't I just make my own mic for this pair of headphones? And so that's what he did.
That's awesome. And so, like, you mentioned, like, a big problem you have as a marketer is, like, trying to convince people or like educate people of the problem and how annoying it is and like the benefit of it. Because obviously like when you're talking in a microphone, it's like, yeah, I don't really care. Like it's just my friends or whatever. So like, how are you doing that in your marketing? Like what are some ways that you're communicating the problem and helping educate people on it and drilling into that pain?
Yeah. So we use a lot of different tactics for this particular question. And you're right. The number one problem we have when it comes to after we get past that why statement is that, what do I care how bad I sound? I don't have to deal with it. And we do have sort of a marketing campaign built around that concept of like making that the joke. So I think there's a little bit of humor you can toss in there in terms of combating things directly. Like, yeah, you know, why make your friends suffer? You know, like,
right.
Cause you know, so we have this sort of like be a good friend campaign idea that comes up in some of our text here and there. There's also sort of this idea that we approach from sort of more common is that when you're online and gaming or just having a business call with somebody or doing a podcast interview, you want to sound your best because that's the representation that you're going to put out on the internet or onto that sales call, right? They don't get to see you necessarily, you know, unless you're doing a webcam, obviously. They don't, you know, it's really hard to catch certain vocal inflections if the mic isn't good. So, you know, you are your microphone is sort of the campaign, the other side of that campaign.
Right. Nice. And, I like
that. Why do you want to, you know, hamstring yourself by having crappy gear?
Right.
So yeah, go on.
No, yeah, there's always that person like I remember back in the day, you know, Xbox, like you hop on the lobby and it's like that person with that bad mic, there's the echo or something bad. Like, I mean, maybe it's music in the background, but it's like the person with the crappy mic, it's like you just mute that person and it's like, see ya, whatever. But that's really interesting how you do that. And I mean, obviously me, like, I totally understand the problem. Like, I run a podcast, I know how important audio is. You know, I work with clients, I'm on calls a lot, and like audio quality, it's like that one thing, like they always say, like in film, if you're trying to make a movie or whatever, it's like the most important thing is like your audio quality. So I think that's super cool that you guys like solve this problem. So like besides like your messaging and stuff, like how are you actually like driving traffic to this product, and like what kind of marketing strategies are you using to get traffic and then turn that traffic into sales?
So, I mean, nothing shocking here. Our two-pronged right. approach involves paid media and earned media. And I sort of head up both of those experiences. Of course, there's sort of the third prong, which is, you know, people picking it up in stores and that kind of thing. We are available in some retail outlets, you know, sort of spontaneous purchasing. But, you know, and I have less to do with that. There's another guy that handles the majority of that stuff. So earned media is my background. Like you heard, I started sort of this PR path, and that's where we put a lot of emphasis. We put a ton of emphasis on PR, making sure influencers, tech reviewers, those kinds of people, podcasts are using our product, are talking about our product, are bringing it up. Because as a podcaster, I'm sure you get asked every now and then, or even in the as you send out emails to people who are going to be on your show, hey, here's some mics that, you know, if you want to make sure you sound great. Really common to see that kind of thing, right? So we want to make sure that we're on that list, we're being considered, you know. People are, you know, when a YouTube's personality gets a tweet, hey, what microphone are you using or what microphone do you recommend, that we come up on that list. So making sure that influencers know about us and are talking about us.
Wow, that's a huge. Really interesting angle. Like, because I hear so many people, like, especially with the influencer angle, I hear so many people say things like, well, they do things like where they just send people their products, you know, to post a photo, like it's like they use them and stuff. But like versus like somebody, like the impact of somebody just doing that and saying like, hey, yeah, I love these microphones, like they're great, they sponsored this post, hashtag ad, versus somebody getting like a Q&A, it's like, hey, your mic sounds awesome, which one is it? Or getting like, in your case, I mean, I'm sure like a lot of, you know, obviously like gaming, you're going after a lot of gaming influencers, so people making YouTube videos, people making on Twitch streams and things like that. And like those people, what they do is they literally just like throw links to everything in the description because they're asked all that. I think it's really interesting that you say that, because it's like, imagine as your brand, instead of going after these people trying to get these Instagram posts, like imagine you're just the go-to brand for the influencers already. I mean, I'm sure that's a totally different conversation to have with those people versus like trying to like cold pitch somebody to like throw up an
it's
Instagram
about
post with it.
Relationship building, really, right? That's the difference. Is it, we do, don't get me wrong, we do the hashtag ad thing also. You know, we especially those people who are already using our products. First of all, that makes ads so much more effective if the person is coming through in a really clear and honest way.
Right.
Right.
How do you find those people? Like, do you already know, or do you like scroll through your Shopify to see who ordered, or do you send it to them to begin with?
It's a mix of everything. So for instance, we are running an ad right now with a guy, WTF Moses. This is a screen name on YouTube. This campaign is about to start. We sent him, we did the ad deal in advance, and I sent him the product. First of all, with the sort of caveat, give it a try, test it out. If you like it, let's talk about doing some ads. He liked it so much that he started posting about it before we paid him.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
He was posting on Twitter that he really loves the thing. So that kind of honesty really comes across, and it's really going to help that later ad placement. The second thing is just yesterday I reached out to a guy, General Sam, I think is his name, his YouTube name. I reached out to him. He said, oh, I already own your product. And I said, oh, really? Let's talk about ad deals then. So I contacted him in order to just send him a free product so he could check it out. And his reply was, I already own it. And so my reply is, oh, let's talk about ads, you know, because he's That's already awesome. A user of our product. So serendipity strikes. It's all about building up those relationships, though. So that's just the first step, right? Now, for these two guys, for instance, it'll be about cultivating that relationship between our brand and they themselves and their audience. And I'm not just talking about shoving product at them constantly. I am talking about, you know, really getting to know them and their channel and what they're trying to do and finding ways that I can help influence them in the future.
Right. So like, how do you do that in practice? Like, how do you go like that personal route where you're like building these relationships versus like just be coming across as like, 'cause I'm sure these people kind of get requests all the time, like people reaching out, like how do you make sure you come across as like genuine and like this cool person versus just like, you know, like, hey, can you do this ad deal? Like churn and burn kind of thing.
Yeah. I think that is the hardest part because it's very time consuming and sometimes it's very hard to see the ROI in it. The answer I have is just be genuine, you know, actually genuinely try to understand who they are and why they're doing what they're doing and what you can do to help them more than just throwing ad money at them, right? What is it, you know, what, and then of course meet them in person if you can. I mean, that's always nice. I'm heading up to Linus Tech Tips Expo, LTX, in July, right? And part of the reason, in fact, really the primary reason I'm going there is to get some face time with these influencers and tech reviewers. And so, you know, that's sort of personal touch and just being able to say, hey, you know, how's your wife doing? You know, whatever happened with this project you were working on, you know, whatever it is, it goes a little bit above and beyond. Yes, we're just like faceless company, you know?
Right. And like you think of this compared to like something like Facebook ads, like think about how powerful it would be like for listeners, like imagine like your brand, if all the top influence in your space just like used your products like on a daily basis and just like posted them, tagged them, just because like, for example, like your clothing company and you make great clothes and you get these good relationships with these companies or with these influencers are just going to wear your clothes because they like them. And then they have to post their content anyway, so they could just end up wearing it and giving you a tag, which is like, and then you get everyone in your space doing that. Like I'm imagining your brand, Joe, with like everybody just like with the mic, right? Like if you're the go-to mic, everybody wants the mic, and it's like when like your target market is ready to buy a mic, they already know like, yeah, I'm saving up for the Antline audio mic.
So yeah, as an example of how you'd work this in is they post, obviously they'll post some Instagram thing and they're wearing your shirt in the shirt example. You know, one is you can occasionally say things like, hey man, nice shirt, you know, through your account. You know, that always spurs like a conversation.
Nice shirt, winky face.
Yeah. You know, it's all about, you know, spurring that conversation. You can't do it all the time though, right? Sometimes you just got to be like, hey man, I really love this, you know, this picture. I really, you know, whatever it is, you know, be honest and be open, you know, don't just flatter people for vapidity.
Right.
But yeah, you know, if somebody's working on a cool project, you're like, oh, you know, you might even send them a direct message instead of making it public to show, you know, that this is more than just me using my account to try to leech off of you, which they know you're doing, right? You're not going to surprise anybody, you know?
Right. Like they know there's something in it for you. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, maintaining and building those relationships is critical. So a lot of our effort is spent there.
Nice. So like when you reach out to these people initially, like what does that look like? Like are you sending them a DM on Instagram? Are you shooting them an email? Or like how does that work? Like are there YouTube private messages? I remember there were back in the day. I don't even know if that's still a thing.
I've never used YouTube private messages. No, that's not like true. I have, but I've never had any
success. 10 years ago. Or is it still a
thing? I think it still exists. Okay. I think. I don't know.
Right.
I have no email. It's all about email. Okay, email or Twitter DM. Email.
Got it. Okay. Or Twitter. And so what does that outreach look like? Like you're saying like, hey, love your videos. Is it something generic? Do you have a template? Or like what does that look like?
My methodology there involves, I always start with one paragraph that is not a copy paste.
Wow, a whole paragraph.
I mean, it could be a short paragraph, but yeah.
But it's like multiple sentences about that
multiple
person.
Multiple sentences. You know, I just talked about, oh, no, I didn't talk about this guy. Another guy I sent a message to, Kevin. I can't think of his channel name. It's me, Kevin, I think. Or it's me, Kev. I forget which.
Is he like a real estate guy or?
No, he's okay. A big gaming guy.
Got it, pretty, got pretty it. Okay, okay.
Channel, I think 750,000 subs. The first thing on his channel was this video about these terrible copy-paste ad inquiries he gets, right? Like, that's his current posted video, like right on the front that autoplays.
Wow, that's hilarious.
And so I started my email with like the same sentence he uses in these terrible, and then I'm like, no, I'm just screw with you.
Oh, that's hilarious. And I bet he's going to respond to that.
He did respond to it.
Oh, he did respond.
He asked me to send the product. I sent it out yesterday. So as an example of that leading to success, right, you take the time to get to know what they're doing, what they're working on, what kind of thing that makes them unique and different. You say, you know, you take the time to comment on that. Yeah, I received another email just earlier this week that said, basically, wow, you're the first email I've had in ages that I know it wasn't a copy paste email.
Oh, wow.
And I said, that's not really true. The end of it was a copy-paste email.
Oh. But, and that's cool about you, too, is, like, you're super honest. Like, we were talking before the call, and I was like, wow, that microphone sounds amazing. And you're like, you know, it's not the best sounding audio, but it is, like, it's the 80-20 of, like, convenience, comfort, and then audio quality.
Yeah. Well, yeah, not to knock our own product, but if you wanted to do a professional podcast, you know, you need an XLR mic, you need an amp, you need all these things.
But yeah, that's when you get into the diminishing returns of...
You're looking at thousands of dollars. Our mic's $120.
Right, you know? Right. For $120, your mic sounds incredible. Especially considering it's freaking wireless, which is just insane. Like, I'm still blown away on this end. Just it's an insane product. But anyway, back to the topic. Okay, so you send these people emails and you send them a whole paragraph that's completely customized and you copy paste the rest of it. But what does the rest of it look like? Are you just trying to are you hey, are you interested in working together? Are you trying to send them a free product? Are you going straight for the ad? Does it vary? What is your kind of approach there?
It varies based on the person I'm sending it to, the current objectives at the time, inventory levels, all kinds of things. Basically, my overall objective is to get our product into people's hands, right? So a lot of times what I'll do is I just offer up the product. I don't even require them to review it, right? I say, look, if you like it and want to review it, that's awesome. That ensures two things for the record. One, it means that when reviews happen, they're almost always good, right? Very rarely will somebody accept a product and then trash it.
Yeah.
Right. They'll just not say anything.
Right. Which is better. You'd rather get no review than a bad review.
I don't know. Yes, probably. Certainly more than a terrible review. What about an average review? Maybe. You know, the pros are this, the cons are that kind of review.
Right. I see.
So there's some gray area. Not everything is buy it or don't buy it.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense.
So you get the product in their hands. Two is you establish a little bit of goodwill by sort of basically trusting that your product is going to be worth their time. The downside, of course, is you're not getting a commitment. So there is and there are times where what I'm looking for is a commitment before I send something to somebody. Maybe their channel is smaller, right? Maybe it's not worth the risk. Maybe they're...
What do you consider smaller, under 100,000 or...?
It's about the average views and about
okay.
I mean, for me... Smaller might be somebody who's going to get less than 10,000 views.
Got right? it. I see. Per video?
Yeah, per video or per, you know, news post, whatever it is.
I see.
So it varies. So that's the point is you understand what you're trying to get and why you're trying to get there.
Got it. And so do you approach somebody who gets for example, the guy you mentioned earlier, that Kevin guy, I just looked him up. He gets hundreds of thousands of views per video. Do you approach him a bit differently than the person you would approach at a smaller level? The person who gets, let's say 10,000 views a video, are you going at them and you're not going to send a product unless you kind of already know they're going to make a video versus this Kevin guy who you're you're sending it. And then if he likes it, he's posting it. Or do you have an ad agreement in place? Or what is that? I know it varies, but just generally speaking, what's kind of the flow of that look like?
I so if somebody gets 10,000 views, I guess the question is, do I treat them differently? Not really. I mean, other than, you know, the messaging might be a little bit different. I might, you know, ask for more things from the smaller guy up front. Otherwise, it's about risk, basically, right? The sending somebody a physical product costs money. It costs the shipping money plus the cost of goods plus right. my time.
And your product isn't necessarily cheap, per se.
Yeah,
especially
no,
to the
cheap.
Gaming audience, who's like, wait, I already have a headset that's $250 or whatever, and now I'm going to throw this wireless thing on it. Like,
yeah, yeah. So it's, I mean, I don't have like a formula, like this is the hard cutoff. You know, maybe I should, but it's not really how I operate. I basically go based on instinct. Like, you know, how excited do I think this person is going to be about our product? You know, how big are they? And yeah, how much do I want to focus on just getting the product to them versus trying to get them to agree to things?
Yeah, I like that. So when you send this to people, like, do you already have an ad agreement in place? Or is that something you work out after they realize they like it or in the review? Like, how do you know when to pay somebody versus like not pay them, I guess?
So I always try to get them to do something for free first.
Oh, got it. I see.
That establishes two things. One, it establishes a commitment to the product, right? Not just for their viewers, but also for them personally, right? They're not going to take the time to do this thing if they don't actually think that it's a good, like it represents their channel very well.
Right. So do you get them to commit to like an entire video before like, hey, listen, we're going to send this product, like if you do a video review?
No, I don't preface it like that at all. I guess is the right way to say it. I think the right way to approach these people, and they're not just YouTube people, you know, these are people with websites, people with streams, people who with podcasts. But the right way to approach it is to not really bring up ads, you know, unless they ask about them. Don't like dangle the carrot, I guess. I don't think that is conducive to that long-term good relationship.
I see.
Right.
But it could potentially be a lever that you pull with the right person.
Yeah. Sometimes they're like, hey, I got it. You know, I tested it. It was pretty cool, but I'm not going to make a video on it. You know, all right. Then you got to go back and say, okay, well, you know, that's cool. Did you like it enough that you'd be willing to go to bat for it on a paid video? And then, you know, then you get that. All right. Yeah. You know, for this amount, I'd be willing to say, you know, that I use it or, you know, whatever. Maybe it usually doesn't sound quite like that.
It's more. Happy to do a review or something like for
yeah.
whatever. Yeah, that's cool. I like how you phrase it like that. I like the way you phrased that question. That's really interesting. And so like when you come into doing like, and I know nothing really about like doing like a YouTube deal for like an entire video or something, but like what is like a price range for something like that?
Oh man, it varies so much. I can't even begin.
Right. Because I mean, I'm sure some people have no clue what to charge. Because is there even, I mean, it's not like there's a standard. It's just kind of like they ask around people like, hey, like what did Squarespace give you for that sponsorship?
Yeah. I think the right way, I mean, I always, and I think everybody always prefers somebody else start with the number.
Right. Like,
so
you,
I don't
you say
be the
number
first,
YouTuber.
Number.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, right. So I avoid that at all costs if I can. And even this question makes me uncertain on how to answer because there are people out there who have reps basically, right? They have their own team.
Right.
And so because there's this sort of middleman, their rates are exorbitantly high, like soul crushingly high. And you're like, I really want to work with you, but I can't pay you $40 CPM, you know, or some ridiculous figure. And then there are other people who, you know, this is a hobby for them. They don't really care. This video will be $3-$4 CPM, something like that. Like the range is so wide that it's, these individual deals are just, they're individual. You know, you have to take the time to get to know that channel and what makes them special and their audience and try to figure out if that match and price are a good deal for you. And if not, you know, bring it up directly with them and say, hey, you know, I really like the channel, but you're not the perfect demographic for us, so we can't afford this. Can you do that price? You know?
Right.
So everything's a negotiation.
Right.
Now, of course, you can avoid all that and just go straight to Google and, you know, put ads directly onto YouTube.
Right.
That, with a little skip button. So basically, you're always weighing the direct deal cost versus that. So on the one metric you can use that is in concrete is how much does it cost to be on this channel as just a regular ad?
Mm. And then you kind of like work backwards and kind of see like what ROI you could potentially get on the ad versus the like the paid placement.
It is always better to be included inside the video than to be in the ad for the same price.
Interesting. And that makes total sense too, because most people just blindly watch the ads or click the skip button unless it's like a really good, unique ad, versus like the person who they've been watching every single day or every single week for, you know, weeks and weeks and months actually recommending your product. I mean, huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the key, right? It's the personal touch you get for a direct deal. Nice. Having the channel you're watching promote the thing is very different than having just a generic ad.
Right. I know. That's kind of like the like product placement in movies, like versus the commercials, like totally yeah. different. Super interesting stuff. So like, how do you, like, what's your process for reaching out to these people? Like, do you have a set kind of like cadence or like a set target of like, I'm going to reach out to X people per week, or do you just kind of go with the flow, or what does that look like?
Kind of varies based on what else is going on at the time. You know, we're a pretty small company.
I guess it's so different if it's like November, December, Q4, like you're obviously worried about other things and trying to reach out to new influencers and build these relationships.
So usually there is a time period, which I call the trough between new product launches for us.
Okay.
And in that trough, I build lists, right? I establish contact with people, you know, and then maybe 3 months before a product is going to be launching, I ramp up outreach to sort of about this new product that's going to be coming. Sometimes I can't even say what it is. I just have to tell people that, hey, we've got something new. Be on the lookout for it. Be ready for it. I really want to know if you'll be interested in reviewing it. It's roughly going to be like this thing, you know, like, you know, I'm as accurate as I can be legally. So, so right before sort of the launch, the pre-launch window is about really heavily focusing on that. And then launch is very much dedicated, of course, to this earned media aspect.
Nice. Yeah. I've heard of that strategy working extremely well for people, like doing launches and then having everybody promoted at once. Is that kind of like your strategy with that too?
Yeah. Yeah. We really want that as the product launches, we flood the internet with the new thing.
Nice. How do you sync that up? And like, how do you handle that? Like, do you pay people? Do you do an affiliate deal with these creators? Or like, how, like, what's your process for that? Cause I see it happen all the time. Like as a consumer, like I'll get all of a sudden, like all of these people in a certain, you know, niche that I follow on Instagram or like YouTube, all of a sudden they're all promoting the same product. Like, how do you coordinate that? And like, what
is
that?
A great deal
like?
Of difficulty in a very large spreadsheet.
I bet. Because, I mean, it's not like it's a standardized thing. Like, you're talking to, like, I mean, dozens of individual people who, like, all kind of have their own flow of doing things. So I can't imagine that it's easy or simple at all.
Yeah, I really do just build a big spreadsheet of influencers.
And you just track everything. Does everybody have the same posting schedule, or is that different too?
No. Yeah, they're all different. So, and I think it's important to recognize that it's more about, at that stage, it's more about volume than it is about accuracy of date. Mm. So, for instance, we had a review go live fairly recently that I'd sent out and expected to be posted a couple of weeks after our launch in November of 2018, right? And it was posted like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow. So
sometimes people are just going to miss what you expect their deadlines to be, you know, because they're... That you're not giving them deadlines unless you're paying for it, right? If you pay for it, then you can expect this is the date it has to happen on, right?
But so
if
you're did you not pay paying for these for launches, it, or
sometimes some of the things are paid for, some of the things aren't.
But this one wasn't.
This one wasn't. So you know, I can't fault him, and I'm happy he did it, right? Like any time is a good time.
Right. So did you have to follow up with him to get him to post, or was just like he just did it eventually?
Yeah,
like,
oh, sweet. I follow up with people all the time. So you know, that spreadsheet, the first column after like their personal details. Is have they done the thing yet?
Right? Oh, nice. Do you try to get people to do like multiple posts and multiple videos, or like, I mean, obviously a lot of your people are on YouTube, but do you have people on Instagram too where you're getting like stories and posts as well?
So the answer to that question is we try to. It's difficult. The way I find that works best for garnering this influence is to follow up, you know, as part of that regular sort of relationship building, follow up and ask them if they have any cool projects that you can be involved in, right? Because they're not going to just keep promoting your product for no reason, you know. But let's just say, since we make microphones, that somebody, oh yeah, you know, I'm I'm reviewing a bunch of gaming headsets, like doing like a little gaming headset shootout next month. I'm like, oh, you know, like, you know, can we be involved in that in some way? You know, that, so something like that, right? So it's not really about our product, but about a tangent to our product.
Right. And like,
and looking for those opportunities.
Yeah, that's really smart, because then you get to, and then it looks like a natural product placement too. And if you have a good product, it's going to place well. And it's like, it's not even an ad. Also, it's probably not even an ad, because you just
want
the product to be a review. That's crazy.
So yeah, it varies. Again, it varies. Yeah. Sometimes they'll say, yeah, we can include you. Here's the inclusion fee. And sometimes they'll say, yeah, we can include you. And that's where it ends. And you say, oh, great. Good. My job is done for today.
Oh, sick. That's awesome. And then I'm just thinking about how this can apply to other stores. Like, for example, like fashion halls. It's like, yeah, actually, I'm doing a spring summer haul. It's like, if you want to send me some of your stuff, it's like, like, it's just like light bulbs and like gears just turning in my head for like all these different industries. Because like, what you're telling me is like totally shifting my perspective on things. And I love this space, like, because I feel like the whole influencer space, like we were talking before the call, it's like, I don't get a lot of marketing experts on this show, because it's like, ooh, everything's a secret, when really like everyone's doing the same things. It's like influencer marketing, paid marketing, Facebook ads, like all the same stuff. But I feel like influencer marketing is specifically like one of these like secret things. It's like the secret thing, like, because especially because it's so new, it's like everyone's almost still figuring it out as you go, and like everyone kind of has these homegrown processes. So it's like super cool to see like how you're doing things, is to get a peek behind the scenes of this stuff. We're kind of starting to run out of time here, but like as we wrap up, do you have any kind of like closing thoughts, like based on our conversation and things, like do you have any closing thoughts or words of advice to end on for somebody who might be thinking about like getting into the influencer space or like upping their game in the influencer marketing world?
Yeah, I would say the biggest piece of advice I have is to be yourself, and caveat that with yourself is sometimes your brand as opposed to you personally, right? So whichever is the overriding force, right? Whether you are a force of personality or your brand is going to be a force of personality, you are dealing with people. And especially if we're talking about influencers and not tech reviewers, we're not journalists, right? Journalists have a code of conduct they follow. Influencers don't, right? And it's very important to make that distinction of who you're talking to. If you are talking about, I am dealing with an influencer, I'm dealing with an Instagram person, or I'm dealing with a YouTube personality or a Twitch stream personality, these are just individuals usually doing this as a hobby, not even as their full-time job. Or if it is their full-time job, they don't come from a background of journalism. They don't come up from a background of like partner management, right? They, in many ways,
are just— They're making it up as they go too.
Right. They're just people doing stuff, right? And if you make it seem fun and cool, they're going to want to do it. And if you make it seem boring and corporate, they're not going to want to do it. But also, if you expect them to perform like a corporation, you're going to be really disappointed, right? They are not going to necessarily play by your expectations or some expected rule book, right? You might send somebody something, they might trash it, right? It is a risk you have to run, right? And you think, holy crap, like, why would you do that, you know?
Right. Like, could they do that in like a paid review too? Has that ever happened?
No, I've never seen somebody do that for a paid review, which is why the idea of paid reviews for influencers is such a touchy topic, like for people, right?
Right.
I've never seen somebody take a paid review and slam the product.
But that would be kind of funny though.
I'm sure it's happened.
Yeah, it's definitely happened.
So yeah, you just can't expect, but you can't even expect them to do things like necessarily on time. I've definitely done paid content where at the end of the day, I wasn't super thrilled with what was produced. Like, but at the same time, you can be kind of upset about it, and you can talk to them about it and like, hey, you know, I wasn't, you know, this really didn't do what I had hoped for whatever reason. And maybe that's about improving your process, making sure that you and they see eye to eye. Maybe they just really just surprised you, like you thought you had everything clear, but they didn't. And then they posted this thing and you're like, whoa, wait, what? You said what? That wasn't even factually right. You know, you just gotta be ready to deal with those kinds of problems as they come up, and understand that you are not necessarily dealing with somebody who's got a lot of experience with these matters. You know, they could just have done this as a hobby and it took off, and they, you know, these kind of paid for gigs or even review gigs are just kind of something they toss together. So I'm not, and I'm not saying everybody's like that. Some of the people I work with are very professional, but you will encounter it if you're dealing with influencers.
Right.
So yeah, be yourself and just understand that they are mostly human.
Yeah, I love that "be yourself" line, because I think so few people are like being themselves. Like even myself on the podcast, when I first started it, it's like I wasn't even myself. I was like this podcast voicey guy. Like my friends all make fun of me because they're like, "You're talking a different voice on your podcast."
And you know, my wife says the same thing about me when I'm on podcasts. Still,
maybe it's a thing. Voice. Yeah, I mean, I definitely have a podcast voice. I've actually heard that too. Or like when I start talking about like something business related that I'm passionate about, like it's kind of like my sales pitch voice too. Not even that I'm salesy at all, but like it's just yeah.
I guess it's there's a line we have to walk, right?
Right.
Between who we really are and who we are when we're presenting ourselves. Yeah, be yourself. Maybe there's an asterisk at the end of that.
Right. Yeah. Be yourself and be relevant. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. It's like, you want to be relevant. Like I can tell you what I ate for lunch today. I had a meatball sandwich.
but I had pastrami.
Oh, nice. But yeah, I mean, it's just like, yeah, be yourself. I think that's great advice too, because so many times, like even as like running these e-commerce businesses, like even though so many people are running them out of, you know, their bedroom or their basement or just a co-working space, it's like easy to get caught up in like, oh, we have to be like super professional and stuff. But it's like, it's actually kind of cool. Like when you can see behind a brand and see that it's actually like a human being, like whether that's through your content or like through an Instagram story or something, like I always find intrigued by that. Maybe it's just because I'm a business owner and I like to see the behind the scenes like that. But like being yourself is super powerful advice. And I really appreciate you coming on the show today and just opening up about this like secret, you know, YouTube influencer marketing space.
Deep, dark underground.
Yeah. Like nobody knows what it is. So you've definitely, well, I think you're going to have to watch out, Joe, because I think some people are going to be coming after you because you revealed some of the deepest, darkest secrets of the internet. So stay safe after this interview goes live. I'll be in touch to make sure you're okay. And I'll let you know when it goes out in advance. But really, really appreciate you spilling the beans here. It was super fun chatting with you. Before we sign off, like if somebody's interested, if somebody's been listening to this episode the whole time, they're like, man, Joe has amazing audio quality. Where can I go to find that microphone? Like, where can we go to learn more about you and your company?
Oh, you can go to antlionaudio.com or just type in the word mod mic into the Google and you'll find us.
Wonderful. And I'll link that all up in the show notes below. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Joe. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Now, listener, before I sign off, stop me if this sounds familiar. Your email marketing is stuck. You feel like you could be doing email better. You're not generating enough email revenue, and you feel like you're leaving money on the table. But you don't have the time to figure email out yourself or do it on your own because you have a business to run. Imagine this. Imagine not having to worry about leaving money on the table with your email marketing. Imagine not having to figure out what to send, when to send it, how many emails should look, what automation you need, what segments you need, how often you should be contacting your email list, or just worrying about sending the next email. You don't have to worry about any of that. Imagine having peace of mind knowing that your email marketing is generating sales in good hands. At Wavebreak, we help Shopify stores maximize their email marketing revenue. That's it. We don't do anything else. And we've created a system called the Wavebreak Method that, number one, makes you less dependent on Facebook or other marketing channels. Let's say something bad happens. Facebook says, "See you later, Shopify store," and they just completely kill your ad traffic overnight. You don't have to worry. You don't have to stress because you're good to go because you have a cushion of email revenue. You don't have to worry about what your wife is going to do or if you're going to be able to make rent or if you're going to be able to pay people because you have this cushion of email revenue to rely on. Number two, the second thing this does is huge. And it's how stores scale from 7 figures to 8 figures to 9 figures. And the secret is repeat purchases. The Wavebreak method gets rid of one-time buyers and increases repeat orders. Number three, it keeps your email list engaged. You don't have to worry about Black Friday and beyond. We'll figure out the ideal amount of times that your list needs to be contacted to maximize revenue, and then we'll execute it for you. If you want to learn more about this system and how we can work together to apply it to your business, go to wavebreak.co to schedule a call with me. and I'll personally send you my calendar link and we can chat one-on-one. Now, I don't have unlimited time to do these calls. I can only do a couple of them per week. So if you want to get your call, go sign up at wavebreak.co for it as soon as possible, and we can talk about how we can work together. Thanks for listening to this episode. Subscribe to the show on iTunes to get notified of new episodes as soon as they drop.